Thank everyone for attending here this morning, and all those who are on the internet. It gives me a great pleasure and privilege to share these glorious, most wonderful teachings of Srila Prabhupada with everyone, and I beg for your prayers that I may say something useful and beneficial for everyone included. Thank you very much, including myself. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 16, and Text Number 2. Yesterday we started a new chapter. So I'll begin with the verse. This is a lot to cover today.
Sat Uttarasya Thanayam. Sa Uttarasya Thanayam. Upayema Iravatati.
Excuse me.
Upayema Iravatim. Upayema Iravatim. Janamajayadim Shchaturas. Janamajayadim Shchaturas. Tasyam Utpadayat Sutan. Tasyam Utpadayat Sutan. Sa Uttarasya Thanayam. Sa Uttarasya Thanayam. Upayema Iravatim. Upayema Iravatim. Janamajaya Dims Chaturas. Tasyam Utpadayat Sutan.
Please chant.
Sa Uttarasya Tanayam. Tasyam Utpadayat Sutan. Sa Uttarasya Tanayam.
Nobody here? Ladies, please. Anyone else? Saha hi Uttarasya of King Uttara. Tatayam daughter. Upayeme married. Iravatim team Iravati. Janame Jaya Adin. Headed by Maharaj Janamejaya. Shatura 4. Tasyam in her. Utpadayat begat Sutan sons. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. King Pariksit married the daughter of King Uttara and begot 4 sons, headed by Maharaj Janamejaya. Please repeat. King Pariksit married the daughter of King Uttara and begot 4 sons, headed by Maharaj Janamejaya. Maharaj Uttara. It's a purport. Maharaj Uttara was the son of Virata and maternal uncle of Maharaj Pariksit. Iravati, being the daughter of Maharaj Uttara, was the cousin sister of Maharaj Pariksit. But cousin brothers and sisters were allowed to get married if they did not belong to the same gotra or family. In the Vedic system of marriage, the importance of the gotra or family was stressed. Arjuna also married Subhadra, although she was his maternal cousin sister. So I won't go too much into this. It's very difficult to, for me anyway, to explain without a genealogical chart in front of me with the names and with the families and the lines pointing down to the families, and then it's very easy to understand. But when we have to do this abstractly, we end up getting nothing. At least that's been my experience. So I'll go to the next point, which is Janamejaya. One of the Rajarshi kings and the famous son of Maharaj Pariksit, his mother's name was Iravati, or according to some, Madhravati. Maharaj Janamejaya begot 2 sons of the names Janatanika and Sankukarna. He celebrated several sacrifices in the Kurukshetra pilgrimage site, and he had 3 younger brothers named Shrutasena, Ugrasena, and Bhimasena II. He invaded Takshashila, I think known today as Ajanta. Is that true, Prabhu? The Ajanta? Yeah. Known today as Ajanta. And he decided to avenge the unlawful curse upon his great father, Maharaj Pariksit. He performed a great sacrifice called Sarpa Yajna to kill the race of serpents, including the Takshaka, which had bitten his father to death. On request from many influential demigods and sages, he had to change his decision to kill the race of snakes. But despite stopping the sacrifice, he satisfied everyone concerned in the sacrifice by rewarding them properly. In the ceremony, Mahamuni Vyasadeva also was present, and he personally narrated the history of the Battle of Kurukshetra before the king. Later on, by the order of Vyasadeva, his disciple, Vaishampayana, narrated before the king the subject matter of Mahabharata. We should not confuse Vaishampayana with Dvaipayana. Vyasadeva's name actually is 3. It's Krishna, Dvaipayana. What's the last one? Huh? Lara? Vyasadeva. Yes. Yeah, of course. Which means Krishna meaning all attractive and, or black, Dvaipayana means island born, born on an island. And Vyasa means one who compiles, one who arranges. He took the Vedas, which was one, and compiled it into four. He was much affected by his great father's untimely death and was very anxious to see him again. And he expressed his desire before the great sage Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva also fulfilled his desire. His father was present before him. Just see the powers that they have. Man has left this world. Nonetheless, he just by his wish, by his desire, has so much potency to bring him into visible existence. Vyasa also fulfilled his desires. His father was present before him, and he worshipped both his father and Vyasadeva with great respect and pomp. Being fully satisfied, he most munificently gave charity, that means lots and lots, opulent charity to the Brahmins present at the sacrifice. Omagyana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. Sa uttarasya thanayam upayema iravatim janamajaya dims chaturas tasyam utpadayat sutan. King Parikshit married the daughter of King Uttara and begot four sons headed by Maharaj Janamajaya. So I thought today I would, coming on the heels of the talk yesterday, which was very nicely and very descriptively explained, I would like to talk more today about how the Bhagavatam came into being, why it had to come into being, what was its real and ultimate purpose, and actually, had it not come into being, we probably would not be sitting in this room today. So, therefore, it has a very nice history, a very colorful narrative, and it actually begins with one day. Well, before I get into the story part, I'd like to mention that if any devotees are struggling with the concepts of Yogamaya and Mahamaya, this is an excellent story which illustrates Yogamaya to the fullest. Mahamaya, as we know, is the illusion which one has in regard to his own pleasure or his own ego. And Yogamaya is an illusion which relates to the fulfillment of the mission of the Lord. So, one day, King Pariksit had gone out hunting, and he had a full day, and he was very tired, very fatigued. He was thirsty and he was hungry. So he was driving through the woods. So he stopped the chariot and jumped off, and he saw that there was a little cottage, a kutir, nearby, which happened to be the cottage of Samyukta Muni. So he got out and he was kind of huffing and puffing. Now we have to know that King Pariksit was a person who was very self-controlled. If he was thirsty, he could control that and not become upset, disturbed, shaken, or rattled. He could just take it, be patient, and wait until he actually got water. In other words, he was not the kind of person whom sometimes you see when the temperature goes up to 100 degrees and you walk on Venice Boulevard and people are just, I'm so thirsty, I'm not going to live this day through. You know, like some of the dogs, they got their tongues out and they're just going back and forth. So everyone is generally affected by the weather, but King Pariksit normally, because he was a sage, because he was a muni, although he was a king, he was not affected, not disturbed, self-controlled, had all the qualities of a Brahmin, and was not proud of all of these qualities. But here Krishna was going to make a change of pace in order that the Bhagavatam would be recited, and in order for King Pariksit to be finished with his days as a king and go back home, back to Godhead. Just see the munificence, see the kindness, the sweetness, and the charitableness of the Lord. Even though he would be leaving, he was going to leave something which was non-different from himself. As we know that we have the person Bhagavat, which is Krishna, and we have also book Bhagavat, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam, which expresses the words and the ideas and the principles that Sri Krishna expressed and taught. So, anyway, the king jumped off his chariot and he began to hasten up the steps of the kutir and into the room. And there was Samikya Muni sitting with his eyes closed, and he was in meditation. And sitting there, there was not even a fraction of movement. So the king came in, and all he was concerned about himself, which is not his normal character. Again, Krishna is changing the character of this great king into a person who is going to create many, many domino effects, as we will see. So the king entered, huffing and puffing, and then he begins to speak to, what's his name again? Samikya, yeah, Muni. He says, "My dear sage, I'm thirsty. I need water. Please help me." So the sage doesn't move, doesn't blink an eyelash. He just sits there like a statue. Now, in the normal situation, normal, Pariksit would know that he was in samadhi. He knows when a person is samadhi because he has that knowledge. But here he did not. Again, Krishna removed that knowledge from him so that he would act in a way which he could use for, as I said, the spread of the Bhagavatam. So, again, he called to Samikya Muni, "I am thirsty. I'm your king. Please, give me something." No movement. He said, "Did you hear me?" He got angry, got upset, got disturbed. No movement. "Why are you pretending to be in samadhi?" Can you imagine saying something? "Why are you pretending?" No movement. "I am protecting you by my force, by my knowledge, by my grace. You have this calm, peaceful kutir where you can be in your so-called samadhi. All I'm asking for is some water." No movement. All right. So he stomps out the door. And as he's walking down the few little steps, he sees a snake, a dead snake there. And because he's very angry, he decides to use it as a weapon to fulfill his vengeance. So he grabs the snake, walks up the steps across the floor, and gets behind the sage and takes the snake and drops it over his neck so that it hangs down his chest and stomach. There. Basically, he didn't say that, but that was the mood. I got you this time. You didn't do anything to me. Stomped out the door and walked out, got up on his chariot, and for the first few moments felt very good about himself that he had shown this person where he, the king, is coming from. Who's strong? Who's powerful? But as he continued riding along, the yoga maya started to withdraw, started to come off. And the king began to ask himself, "Why did I do that? What was the... He was in samadhi. Everything gets clear to him. He says, "So foolish, so stupid. Why did I do that? I would never do that. This is yoga maya." Maya meaning he was in illusion. He was in the bodily concept for a few moments. He was thinking he's the body. If he doesn't get water, he'll die. If he doesn't get food, he'll die. This is wrong. And in his normal state, he would never think such an idea. He would say, "Okay, don't get water. Now I'll get it later. Who cares, you know?" This is the kind of detachment that he had. So he continued in this vein, driving to the palace. And all he could think of was, I never should have done that. This is he's a great sage. How can I pay for this? Now, while this was going on, the door of the kutir was open. And there were a few little young boys, friends of the son of Samikya Muni. And they were watching this whole incident take place. And they were so awed that the king, who's known as being righteous, peaceful, self-controlled, loving, munificent, all these things and many more, could act like that. It seemed impossible. And so what happened is that those boys, they went down to the riverside where the son of Samikya Muni was. Pardon? Yeah, I didn't get to that. Yeah. His son, Sringi, was standing, and they told Sringi exactly what had happened. Now, Sringi loved his father very much. He had lived with him the whole life. He was a Brahmin, and he had quite a bit of Brahminical power, such that if he cursed someone, it would come to pass unless the person he cursed had enough power to repel it. So, Sringi heard this. He became outraged. He was upset. He was disturbed. How dare thou watchdog, that's what he called the king, a watchdog, go into our house. Watchdogs are not allowed into the house of Brahmins. That's the way he treated the whole situation. For that offense, he will pay for this. So, he didn't say he wrapped the thread around his thumb, but that's often what's done. And he said, I hear right now, curse this king, that in 7 days he will be bitten to death by a snake bird. And everybody heard this. So, he felt really good at that moment. He felt he had avenged his father's insult that the king had given him. So he began walking home, and as he began walking home, he began to realize the enormity of his crime, that he had just cursed really an innocent person. After all, he was very hungry. He was very thirsty. Maybe he was on the brink of death. He didn't even think about those things. But he realized at that moment, as he was walking home, tears started to come down from his eyes, all down his cheeks. He said, why did I do that? I shouldn't have done that. Again, this is Yogamaya working. The beginning of Kali Yuga. The destruction of the pure Brahminical caste. So anyway, he went in and woke his father and talked to his father and told his father what he had done. His father heard this. He was outraged. He said, how could you do this? He's a great king. He's more advanced than I am. And you have the audacity to do such a thing to the king? How? Why? Why didn't you at least come for my permission? You know that everything you do, which is new and important, maybe dangerous, sorry, you come for my permission. That is the standard. Why didn't you do that? No. He didn't, because he was under Yogamaya. And all he felt in under this Yogamaya is outrage, hatred, vengeance, and that's what he did. So he told his father exactly these were the feelings. He said, oh, this never should have been done, never. Anyway, what next happened was that Shamikya Rishi, he sent one of his servants to the palace of the king to tell the king that his son had cursed him and that he would be dead in 7 days. So when he did that, the king heard this. He was happy. I'm going to be dead in 7 days. You see, just see the difference between this person and an ordinary person. Why was he happy? Because he was a God-realized soul. And generally speaking, while he was performing his various duties, even then he was thinking of the Supreme Lord. But the desire of a person who's as pure and as advanced as he is, he would like to just see only, exclusively, the Supreme Lord and offer his loving affections and prayers and service to him. So the king was not at all upset. He could have battled the curse. He had enough punya, or what they call power, spiritual power. But he would not do that because he knew that this was the will of God. And it was. All this was like a scenario, like a screenplay that was set up in which the Lord is having the characters say certain things which are going to have certain effects. And the effect that it's going to have right now is that the king, his next words will be, if I'm going to die in 7 days, then I want to die before or near the Ganga, where the water which is mixed with the dust of Lord Vishnu's lotus feet will be. And that will be a very sanctified death. So, therefore, he's not upset about all this. So, what happens is that I should also mention that the sage, he sent a servant. Well, I just already mentioned that he sent the servant in which he told him that he was going to die in 7 days. And so the next thing that happened was that the king had to organize things rather rapidly because going to die in 7 days, he didn't want anything to do with his kingdom anymore. He wanted to renounce it completely and give it over to his son, Jayamajaya. And that's exactly what he did. He explained what had happened. Of course, Jayamajaya was incensed. He was furious that this Brahmin would curse his innocent father. Very, very, very upset, very disturbed. Nonetheless, it was his position to carry on the kingdom as the new king. So, King Pariksit then went down to the Ganges, and there was a platform there, and he sat down on the platform, and on the platform there was some straw, and he sat down on the straw, and he began to meditate and ask himself, what is a person to do when he is about to die? What should he speak? What should he chant? What should he hear? What should he remember? What should he worship during that time when he is about to die? So he asked himself that question, and no sooner did he ask that question than numerous sages began coming into the whole area. Hundreds and hundreds of sages. One may ask, well, how did they find out all about this? Nothing is a secret to Krishna, and the hearts of Krishna's devotees are an open book in which he can deliver the message. Go down to the Ganges where King Pariksit is waiting for guidance, which he wants. The guidance that will allow him, enable him, and help him to completely absorb himself in Lord Vishnu or Krishna. So that's what happened. So many great sages, one of whom was, as we know, is Suta Goswami. And many of these sages didn't just listen. They listened in such a way that they would remember everything that was spoken. They had this kind of memory. So, and sometimes even today, we find a person who has that kind of memory. He can remember anything that's told to him as long as he wants to do that. And Lord Chaitanya gave a wonderful demonstration. Of course, he's God. But he gave a demonstration of this when he was with the Digvijaya, the poet, who uttered off about 100 different verses. And then the Lord said, I think your poetry is just wonderful. It's so beautiful. But there's a few faults in it. And the Digvijaya said, faults? My poetry? He said, yeah, just a few. No, it has no, there's no, what do you know? You're just a beginner in Sanskrit. You're teaching beginner Sanskrit. He says, yes, I know. And my association is certainly not as good as you. But if you will allow me, notice the way he's asking in such a humble, modest, retiring way, not to push the idea that the Digvijaya has made a mistake. just that he wants, just this little fall. So I said, all right, go ahead. So he picks out a verse. I don't know what the, it doesn't give him the number, but let's just say for argument's sake, it's 64. And he utters the whole verse. Now, he, remember, the Digvijaya uttered 100 verses, but Nimai Pandit, he was able to pick out that one, not only recite it, but recite and point out all the faults in it, and embellishments of it. So the Digvijaya, he was completely floored. He couldn't speak. He just shook his head and he went home. And that night he had a dream, and Goddess Saraswati, which was his primary, deity or demigoddess, and she told him, the reason you have been stumped and your pride has been crushed, it is because it has been done by a person who is far superior to you, to me, and to all the demigods. He is the Supreme Lord. He says, the Supreme Lord? Yes, the Supreme Lord. So you go down and you apologize and you beg mercy from him, which is basically what he did. And he gave up this big position. He didn't care about that anymore. All he wanted to do is to... He realizes this, that no matter how high, how big, how great you become, you can be crushed to the floor any moment, any second, by the Lord's will. Many times we get in positions, we think this is impossible. I own this position. This is my position. Nobody can throw me from this position. I'm firm. I'm strong. I'm great. I'm glorious. No, no, no. This is a big, that's real Mahamaya. The Lord decides. And if a devotee is genuinely and truly humble, thankful, appreciative, grateful for what he has, and ascribes every benefit that he has to the Supreme Lord, and considers himself nobody, nothing, insignificant, worthless, just a simple servant. If the devotee maintains that mentality, what happens is that more benefits, more opulence, more of these things, because he can handle them. Look at Srila Prabhupada. He received so much opulence. Krishna wasn't afraid. Give him too much opulence, maybe he'll get proud. What did he do with that opulence? What did he do with that money? Millions of dollars were coming in. More and more books were being printed. More and more books were being distributed. More and more devotees were being made. So it was a good use of the money. Many people, and I've seen this, they receive an inheritance of several million dollars, and the first thing they do is they say, well, I think I've had enough austerity for a few years, and it's bye-bye to the temple, and they go out and they buy a big, Porsche or a Lamborghini or one of those high-pollutant, high-end cars. So I went off a little bit on a tangent, but to show a certain point here, this mentality that the Jagvijaya had was the opposite of what King Pariksit had. Pariksit was humble, he was sweet, he was generous, but he could be firm, he could be harsh, as he was, and we will see very shortly, to the personality of Kali, who was trying to insert or invade his evil into the world, and how King Pariksit deals with that. Getting back to this point. So who came after all these sages came? Who came walking in but Shukdeva Goswami? He's a 16-year-old boy, very handsome, very beautiful. His long locks, kind of tangled, matted, not wearing any clothes, and there were some people following him. They thought he was a madman. They said, he's crazy. But he's not saying anything. When he passes, there's some girls, women, bathing in a nearby pool. It's as if he sees them, but it's as if he was just looking at the water or the tree or the bark or the leaves. They were not women to him. They were just beings, living beings, souls. There was no sense of, wouldn't it be nice to enjoy them? There was not the slightest. His father walked by a little later on. His point of view or his viewpoint was a little different. Remember, he was married. So he was not as pure as his son. And the girls who were bathing, they immediately covered up because they didn't want to be seen by a person who might desire them. But when Sukdev walked by, it was as if it could have been a squirrel or a monkey or whatever. It had no effect whatsoever on them or on him. I'm simply mentioning that to show the extent, the height, the greatness of his austerity, of his celibacy, of his purity. And that's why when he entered and walked up on the platform where the king was sitting, all the sages, hundreds of maybe thousands, they all stood up. Jai, Jai, Sukdeva Goswami Ki Jai, you know. And then they sat down, and then Sukdeva Goswami sat in his place. And the first thing that Maharaj Pariksit asks, he says, "My dear Sukdeva Goswami, my dear Sukdeva Goswami, what I'm about to die in 7 days. Probably you must know this, that's why you're here. To help me to get through this." He said, "What is a person to do when he's about to die? What should I be thinking of?" So very simply, Sukdeva Goswami said, "You should be thinking of Vishnu, 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 Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. You chant about him, you talk about him, you read about him, you remember the pastimes of him, you sing about him, you remember his great triumphs, his glories. All these, you never let go of the idea of the Lord. Thinking of him and only him, you will feel the inner joy, the inner happiness, the inner strength, and you will enter into a trance in which you will not hear anything, you will not see anything, and if anything touches your skin, you will not even feel that, because the mind will have gone completely inside and you will be with Krishna. That's what you should do." And you have been doing that most of your life anyway. You were trained by King Yudhisthira, by Arjuna, by Bhima, and the twins. You've had a perfect, not only education in arms, but an education also, of course, in shastras. You've had an education in what should be done, what should not be done, in etiquette. Vaishnava etiquette. You know all these things. So therefore, this is nothing new to you. And of course, that's true. King Pariksit knew all these things. So why did he want to ask questions which he already knew the answer to? The reason he would ask the questions is simply so that when Sukdeva Goswami would give the answer, all those persons who in the audience would hear those answers and hear those questions, would memorize them, and then distribute them where they would go. For example, Suta Goswami went to the 1,000-year sacrifice, and he would bring the Bhagavatam to them. And this was being done by many, many other saints and sages. The idea was to distribute the Bhagavatam as far and wide, not only on this planet, but on other planets as well. So the question arises. Oh, it's getting late, sorry. So the question arises. I'll just wrap it up in a few moments now. So the question arises, then why do this? Because when Krishna left meaning he ascended to the spiritual world, he was the protector, he was the guide, he was the one who gave understanding. He gave all this. So many of the sages and many of the, even the demigods were wondering, well, how is this world going to be protected if Krishna is not here? So the answer is that the world would be protected by the Bhagavatam. As I said, this book Bhagavata. Book Bhagavata means that it is the Supreme Lord in the form of a book, and the words which are there are the words of the Lord. And when one reads those words with faith, with devotion, with love and understanding, and one does comprehend them, then what happens? He gets the benefit of those. And the benefit means that he can repel the evils of Kali. If Kali tries to challenge him, tries to tempt him, tries to allure him, he can throw him away because he has the inner strength to do this. And therefore, the Bhagavatam was to be the great weapon against Kali in Kali Yuga. So, therefore, it was that. And therefore, for that reason, King Pariksit did not baffle the curse. He wanted this this discourse by Shukdeva Goswami to take place for the benefit of the whole world. And so he gave these various answers, and and I was reading it last night very intently because I wanted to remember as much as I could for the class today. And I was just completely awed by the material there. If you're in the proper mood, if you're in a devotional mood, if you're in an admiring mood of how great this is, it all becomes to come so clear, so perfect, so beautiful, that you feel and you think of Srila Prabhupada, and all you can say is, thank you so much for getting this Bhagavatam to our eyes and our hearts. Without this, we would be just not just dead person, but filthy dead persons. Yeah. But with Prabhupada, we can become clean, so clean that we can go back home, back to Godhead. And instead of coming back, birth after birth, reincarnation after reincarnation, suffering, misery, uncertainties, doubts, instead of all of those things coming, misery, life after life, which is what most people get, because they're attached to the material world. This Bhagavatam detaches us. It withdraws us. It enables us to see the illusory aspect of the world. So therefore, we can thank Srila Prabhupada over and over today and every day for this great mercy that he has bestowed upon us, without which we would not only not be here, but we would not have the advancement to whatever degree it is that we have today, and therefore we would just be good for nothing, useless, worthless, and that's all I have to say. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you. What? Yeah, I'll keep my papers together.